gets tuned to yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, horror. Later on, we hear The Haunting Hour from 1945, but right now it's Quiet Please, with the story by Willis Cooper, Calling All Souls. Ernest Chappell stars in this Mutual Broadcasting System episode from Halloween, 1948.
Quiet, please. Quiet, please. The American Broadcasting Company presents Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper, and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet, Please for today is called Calling All Souls. I tell you what happened last Halloween, or All Souls, or All Hallows, or whatever you call it in your part of the country. I bet you can't guess where I was. Well, I was a couple of places. But where I started, I was sitting in a tight little room in a great big house. You ever been west? Well, you know when you cross the Mississippi River on the Santa Fe from Illinois to Iowa, about 4 or 5 hours out of Chicago, Fort Madison, Iowa? Ever notice that great big place right alongside the riverbank to your right? The big high walls and the towers and the big gates? That's right, the Iowa State Prison. That's where I was last Halloween. In a little cell. Oh, very comfortable. All by myself. Waiting. And not much more time to wait. Sure. The death cell. I was just sitting there playing solitaire on the edge of my bed, trying not to think of what was coming up and thinking of nothing else but that. I was pretending I'd paid the house $52 for the deck, and the house would pay off $5 for every card I got on the top row. I was $32 to the good this particular hand. I didn't hear anybody come up. I didn't hear anybody except the guard walking around till this voice spoke to me.
Red 9 on the 10 of clubs, Lewis.
Oh. Hello, Delbert. Yeah, that's right. Coming in?
Yeah. How are you?
I'm all right. So far. How are you?
All right.
Sit down.
Yeah.
No soap, huh? Turned us down.
That's right.
What'd he say?
Oh, a lot of things.
What?
What's the difference? He said no.
It's tough, Delbert, when I didn't do it.
It's tough on me, too, Lewis.
Yes, but they're not going to hang you.
I begged him to give you a 2-week stay, at least, but he said his conscience wouldn't let him.
Conscience, huh?
He said if he felt I could turn up anything at all in 2 weeks, he'd be tempted to give you the benefit of the doubt. You've had 3 stays now.
Could you turn up anything?
Lewis.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
I've done everything I could.
I know. But I didn't do it, Delbert.
I know you didn't. But proving it.
You want to play cards? I guess I don't want to play either. Well,
I've done my very best, Lewis. My very level best.
I know, I know. It's pretty tough on me, though, ain't it?
Certainly is.
No hope at all?
No hope at all. No witnesses, plenty of motive, your fingerprints all over everything?
I remember. Only I didn't do it.
Who did you? Got any idea, Lewis?
No idea at all.
I thought maybe.
I just opened the door after I'd knocked a dozen times. I just opened the door, and they were on the floor, I told you.
I know.
And I was so shocked. You know, I couldn't help it. I tried to. That's how I got the fingerprints all over.
You told me.
I admit I didn't like Harris. I didn't go for Etta very much either. But I didn't kill him, Delbert.
You told me.
I just went out there to ask him to let me have however much he could of that
$2,000 he owed me for the pigs.
You should have made all those statements about how you were going to get the money or else.
I know it. He shouldn't have gone through his desk looking for the money either.
I don't know why the dickens you did that.
Well, I don't know either, but I said I was shocked. I just thought this was a good way to get the money if I could find it. Nobody would know, I figured. I knew if I didn't get it then, I'd never get it. They were lying there on the floor.
Lewis, listen, it was pretty hard to convince a jury you didn't do it with them lying on the floor and you going through the desk and blood spots on your suit and everything.
I know it, Delbert. I was crazy to do it. But I didn't murder him.
I know that, I told you.
Delbert, are they sure enough going to hang me?
Unless...
Unless what?
They discover new evidence.
Where are they going to discover that?
They'll have to do it awful fast.
Where are they going to discover it?
You tell me.
There isn't any more evidence. Whoever really did it covered his tracks too good.
I'll say he did. Oh, you smooched it up fooling around.
Oh, my gosh, Delbert, I was just trying to see if I could help.
And seeing if you could find the money, Harris owed you.
Well, I know it was foolish, but...
Honestly, Lewis, now, you wouldn't expect anybody in his right mind to believe your story,
but it's
you?
True, I tell you.
I know it's true, but I couldn't make the jury believe it, or the governor.
How do you know it's true?
What?
How do you know it's true?
Why, I just know it, Lewis. I've seen murderers before, you know.
You don't think I'm a murderer?
Of course not.
Delbert, don't you really think there's a chance of uncovering some new evidence? Really?
I think the only people who saw the murder, the only people who know who did it, are Harris and Etta themselves.
But they're dead.
That's right. They're dead, Lewis. Look, what I stopped in for, you want me to ask Father McIntyre to come around and see you now?
Thirteen steps up with your hands fastened behind you. 13 steps. Stop and turn around. The man says, stand here. Look down the 13 steps at the reporters, the doctor with a stethoscope hanging around his neck. Feel a man tying your feet together. Feel a floor give a little underfoot. See how the man stays away from the little trap door, reaching out to make the rope tight around your ankles. Listen. Father McIntyre's voice in your ear. A little rustling behind you and a black hood over your head and you can't see anymore. But you can feel the rope as it brushes against your neck, a little hairy and creepy crawly on your skin. And the weight of the knot, 9 turns on your shoulder. The floor gives a little underfoot. No! I can't. I thought I didn't do it. I tell you, I didn't do it. All I could think of was what my lawyer said, what Delbert said before he got up and opened the door and went away.
The only people who saw the murder, the only people who know who did it, are Harris and Etta themselves.
And Harris and Etta knew I didn't do it. Maybe they didn't know who it was that did it, but they did know that I didn't do it. Maybe they didn't. And maybe they did. Maybe they did know. Maybe they could tell me. Maybe they could discover some new evidence, the way Delbert put it. Maybe they could tell me where to go, who to look for, what I'd find. I could tell it all to Delbert. He could go tell the governor, and I'd get a stay. Maybe the evidence would be good enough so they'd let me go. Maybe they wouldn't hang. But Harris is dead. And Etta's dead. I saw them dead on the floor of their house when I went. And they accused me of murdering them. They found me guilty. I'm in the death cell, waiting. Harris, Etta, don't let me die. Don't let them. Etta, Harris, have mercy on my soul. And when I heard the bell tolling somewhere in the distance, I remembered. I remembered what night this was. This was All Souls' Night. This was the night when the souls of the weary dead walked the earth again. I remember when graveyards yawn and tombs give up their dead. And the sound of the bell tolling away in the darkness of early evening. Calling all souls. Calling all souls. And I wondered if my soul had to leave my body when I walked up the 13 steps and after, if my soul had to leave my body then, why could it not leave my living body for a while and go seeking after the others that stepped from the tomb this night? The souls of the weary dead, the souls of the unhappy dead, the murdered, the kindly souls that knew. Then I sat down again quietly. The fit of deadly terror was gone for a moment. I was exhausted and weak. I closed my eyes and the sound of the distant bell faded out, as I thought. Why can't it be possible, I thought? All these things are not mere superstition. There's some foundation in every belief, I thought. I can't die. I'm innocent, I thought. And only those two know the truth. Calling all souls. I repeated again to myself. Calling all souls. And I stood up. I stood up in that brightly lighted, sorrowful place. And as I rose, I turned to look behind me. And there, on the bed, still in an attitude of despair, sat my body. And in a flash of darkness, the place faded away, the stone walls and the iron bars and the bare, narrow bed, the man in prison uniform seated motionless on its edge. And I stood alone in the darkness of a place I knew. Tall marble shafts gleaming faintly in the starlight, curving gravel roadways hedge-bordered, and the scent of moldering flowers in the darkness. A dry rustle of a weather-beaten flag at the head of a low mound beside me. And loneliness, all aloneness pressing inward upon me like a living thing. The eve of all souls. And suddenly, quietly in the cold shadows, little whispers of innumerable voices. The voices of the wandering souls that hastened past me, seeking their dusty desires across the face of the world they once all knew. And then a voice, speaking to me in the dark, speaking my name in the darkness, calling me.
Lewis.
And another voice.
Lewis.
And I knew I had won, for these were the voices of the two they said I murdered.
Why, of course you didn't, Lewis.
Of course you didn't.
And a little child, a little boy, ran up in the darkness and took my hand and laughed to hear my name.
You remember little Tommy, our little boy that died when he was six?
And I remembered. And in the darkness I saw many another I'd all but forgotten. Charlie Cullum that was killed at Romaine in the Argonne 30 years ago. Albert Newhouse, my Boy Scout comrade that drowned so many years ago. Grace Williams, who died at her husband's hand. Crowds and crowds of the ones who had gone before, spending this, their brief holiday on their well-loved earth. And I, the only living soul among them, spending my brief moment with them to seek my life from them. On All Souls' Eve a year ago. Drip, Etta, and Harris there. And I said, help me. And Etta answered me.
What is there we can do now, Lewis?
You know I didn't kill you, Etta.
Of course.
Of course.
They're going to hang me for it.
You didn't do it.
But how can I prove it? Delbert said if we could find new evidence.
There's plenty of evidence, Lewis, to be found.
Where? How?
Why, let me see. He found the money.
That's why you couldn't find it, Lewis.
But if he found the money, it must be gone by now.
No, he has some of it left.
But what good does that do?
Why, there's a list of the numbers of the bills somewhere.
They looked for it. They couldn't find it.
Have them look in the bedroom, Lewis, behind the third drawer in my chest of drawers. I know where it is. It fell down there.
Oh, that's wonderful. That...
But what good will it do now? Unless we know... Unless you tell me...
There's plenty of evidence, Lewis, if you'll just look for it. He ripped his coat on the catch of the living room door. There's threads there that could be identified.
You know who did it? You know who did it?
Yes, we know.
Yes, we know.
Then tell me. Tell me, and I'll see... Delbert will see that he confesses. Look, I tell you, they're going to hang me for it. Do you hear? Tell me...
Oh... And you still hate me. And you haven't learned mercy since you... You're going to let me die because you hated me while you were alive.
Lewis.
You're going to carry it beyond the grave. You're going to keep it to yourself and let me hang.
You hated us, Lewis.
Yes, I hated you and I hate you now. Ghost or no ghost, soul or no soul, I... No. No, Harris, have pity on me. It's all over now. There's no use hating me. Don't you hate the man that killed you? Don't you?
No, Lewis, no.
We don't hate him.
But you hate me. You're going to let me die. You know I'm innocent. You're going to let me die just because we didn't like each other on Earth.
Lewis, listen to us. There's no such thing as hate anymore with us.
Then why don't you give me a chance to live?
Go back, Lewis. Go back to your body.
Go back.
Go back. To die.
Dying isn't so bad, Lewis. You don't see any unhappiness among all these souls, do you?
I don't want to die.
You'd rather save your life for a while at the expense of somebody else's life?
But I'm not guilty. And he is.
Go back, Lewis.
Go back.
I won't go back till you tell me who killed you.
Listen to me, Lewis. You're tampering with things that you have no right to know. Your soul has left your body before its time. You have come upon secrets that no living man should know. Your body is waiting for you. Go back to it while there's time.
While there's time.
It is only this one night that souls may walk the earth.
And when morning comes...
Well?
When morning comes, if you are still here... Lewis, I can make you no promises.
Go back, Lewis.
Tell me the man's name.
No, Lewis. No, it's none of your affair.
None of my affair? Don't you understand what I said to you? They're going to hang me. None of my affair. Listen.
There was no need for you to send your soul out seeking us, Lewis.
I don't get that.
We have been waiting for this night, Lewis.
Well?
Tell him, Harris.
He will have to come with us now.
Yes, that is the law.
You should not have come here. Lewis, there is still time, but only a little time. If you go back now...
I won't go back. I won't go back until you tell me.
You have no right here, you know, Lewis.
But I'm here.
And now it is too late.
Yes.
You will have to come with us.
Where are you going?
Tell him, Harris.
We are going to visit the man who murdered us.
You what?
I told you there was no need for you to come here, Lewis. We have a way of taking care of this man.
I don't know what you mean.
Haven't you ever heard of haunting, Lewis?
Come with us now, Lewis.
No.
You must come.
You're really going to haunt him?
and make him confess?
We are going to appear to him, Lewis.
What he will do, we cannot say.
But when he sees us...
Well, then I'm going back to the prison.
No.
No.
I'll go back and I'll call the warden. I'll get Delbert. Tell him that there'll be a confession. Delbert will get me a stay of execution. Then when he confesses, I'll be... Who is it, Harris?
Come with us and you will see.
No, I'm going back to the prison, I told you. Get things all set up.
No, you changed your mind too late, Lewis.
Too late? Why?
No, Lewis. You have meddled too much. You have gone too far. The souls of the living have no place here. But you have come.
We told you to go back while there was time, Lewis.
Yes, but...
Now you must come with us.
No. No. I want to go back.
Come, Lewis.
High, high up over the face of the sleeping starlit world with the tiny lights of the living far below us. The broad, peaceful farmlands, the sleeping cities, the broad breast of the great river far below us. The universe throbbing with strange, compelling song. And above us, around us, the sense of a million souls, a million, a myriad, a countless multitude, returning joyously to their single night upon the earth they loved. And I looked up in the clearness of the haunted night, and above me, the endless pathway of the Milky Way glowed with a strange splendor. And Etta plucked my sleeve.
The pathway of the souls, Lewis. The way we all return.
And I saw the features of the ones I had loved. Of strangers. Of men and women and little children. Of boys in ragged uniforms. Of bearded ancients and smiling babes in their mother's arms. And on their faces in the sparkling night an expression of awful eagerness. Of long-awaited realization that this night they would once again rest upon the mortal earth. And I... Even I, the only living soul amongst all the multitude of the dead, even I felt an overpowering desire to set my feet again this moment upon the reality of Earth. And I closed my eyes for a moment. And when I opened them, we three were in a room. And on a bed there was a sleeping man.
This is the man.
This is the man.
Who is he?
Go and look.
I... No.
Go and look.
I don't want to...
Go and look, Lewis.
You must go and look, Lewis.
He lay there, sleeping as innocently as any child. The covers were drawn up about his face as if he were shutting out some childish fancy of boogeymen in the dark. But I knew him for a wicked, guilty man. The man who held my own life in jeopardy.
Look at him, Lewis.
Look at him, Lewis.
And I lifted up the comforter that hid his face and bent down to look at him. Delbert. Delbert. My friend. The man who had defended me in the courtroom and lost. The man who had gone to the governor. Or had he gone? To plead for my life. Delbert. The man who told me, of course I know you didn't do it. Of course he knew. He alone of mortal men knew the murderer. For the defender of the accused man was the murderer himself.
Wake him, Lewis.
No.
Wake him.
Delbert. Delbert. Delbert, wake up.
He came with us, Delbert.
Harris!
Harris and Etta, Delbert.
No! No, go away! You're ghosts!
We are human souls, Delbert. Come to hear your testimony.
No! No, I won't tell you anything!
You murdered them, didn't you, Delbert?
No!
You murdered us, Delbert.
No! No, I...
Confess, Delbert.
I didn't do it!
You did do it.
You, Lewis! You can't be here!
Confess.
Well, I...
Confess.
Lewis must hear you, Delbert.
Lewis! Lewis, I did do it! I killed them, Lewis! I murdered them! I knew I could throw the blame on you. I knew I could get you convicted and I could save myself. I hated them too, Lewis. Oh, Lewis. Lewis, forgive me. Lewis, forgive me.
May he forgive you, Dalbert? Ask Harris and Etta to forgive you.
Harris. Etta.
We have already forgiven you, Dalbert. But you have done a great wrong to Lewis.
You will be punished, Delbert.
I'll confess. I'll go to prison.
I'm going back to my body now in the prison.
Lewis.
Thank you.
Forgive me.
Thank you, Harris. Etta.
Lewis.
I'm going back. Oh, Harris, you...
Wait, Lewis.
What?
Lewis.
Be quiet, murderer. What, Harris?
You can't go back, Lewis.
I can't go back? Why, what if I... What?
You must stay, Lewis.
Stay? Stay? Why must I stay? My body's back there in the prison waiting for me. I've got to get back and live.
No, Lewis.
Why? Tell me why. Everything's all... What's the matter?
You tell him, Delbert.
Lewis.
Well?
Lewis. They hanged you half an hour ago.
The title of today's Quiet Please story is Calling All Souls. It was written and directed by Willis Cooper, and the man who spoke to you was Ernest Chaffer.
And Kermit Murdoch played Dalbert. Harris and Etta were respectively Ralph Schulman and Mary Patton. Mr. Cooper and I are very grateful for the superb efforts of Albert Berman, who was always responsible for our Quiet Please music. Now, for a word about next week, here is our writer-director, Willis Cooper.
Thank you for listening to Quiet Please again. Next week, I have a story for you called Adam and the Darkest Day.
And so, until next week at the same time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chaffer.
Quiet Please on Tuned to Yesterday from October 31st, 1948 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. Other scary shows heard on Mutual that day were The Shadow with a story Murder by a Corpse and Sherlock Holmes with the Adventure of the Uddington Witch. Also on the radio that day was the first broadcast of the Rocky Jordan Adventure Series, which began on the CBS Pacific Network and was heard through 1951. It's an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now on to the Haunting Hour, where murder wears a strange mask. That's the story in the syndicated broadcast from 1945.
This is the Haunting Hour. Every highway and byway is destiny's trail. And where it leads and what lies ahead is destiny's secret. Down a dark road speeds a car, bearing in it two who are destiny's children. Oh, they don't know it. To themselves, they're two people on their way to a masquerade ball. Steve Raymond and his fiancée, Marcia Phillips, heading for an evening of gaiety and laughter. But they are destined to spend a strange, macabre evening in fear. For one of the guests at the masquerade is death.
You're rather fetching in your gypsy costume, Marcia.
In a moment, I'll be tempted to read your mind.
Well, there isn't much I can hide from you, darling. Your womanly instincts are quite remarkable.
Especially where John Williams is concerned?
Oh, now look here, Marcia. I must admit this magician's disguise of mine isn't too effective. For one thing, it hasn't helped me to change your disposition.
Steve.
But if you will, my dear, please try to check your suspicions at the door. Fortunately, we're not married as yet, and Ben Carter's masquerade promises too good a time for you to spoil.
At the risk of being stubborn, dear, I'm curious to know what you see in her. Or perhaps you can tell me why Roy Benson is still madly pursuing her.
I guess he never stopped loving her. He was her first husband.
Just the same, Steve, dear. If I so much as see you go near her tonight, I might be tempted to drop a potent mixture in the punch bowl.
Oh, be careful with your predictions, darling. You're a gypsy fortune teller tonight, and I'd rather not see you proven accurate.
That's up to you, Steve.
You're a little early with your masquerade, Marcia. Wait till we get to Ben's place. Then you can feed strychnine to Joan Williams and all my other loves.
Me. I'm not supposed to know who you are.
That wasn't fair, Ben.
Well, what else could we expect from my partner, dear? He knows every hair on my head.
Well, don't fear. I won't give you away. Well, you both look perfect.
You've adopted a rather simple costume, Ben.
I've used this clown suit for 15 years. It's a durable disguise.
Good heavens. Who's that fellow in the black tights and shirt supposed to be?
Hmm? Oh, he's posing as a royal executioner.
Who can it be, Steve?
Hard to tell from here. I don't seem to recognize him.
Steve, I've simply got to find out who that executioner is.
Oh, now, Marcia.
He's just over there. Well,
can't you wait till midnight?
Quiet, here he is. Oh, I beg your pardon.
Good evening.
That's a very unusual costume you're wearing.
Thank you. I merely borrowed it from a friend of mine. I hope it's effective.
Your voice, it's quite familiar.
Oh, now, Miss Phillips, don't you recognize Steve Raymond's rival for Joan Williams' hand?
Roy Benson.
Of course. I follow Joan everywhere. And especially on a night such as this, I couldn't resist seeing her dressed as Cinderella.
And in a very charming costume, too, no doubt.
Oh, but naturally, my wife, I beg your pardon, my former wife, has a talent for being beautiful.
Now, what sort of executions do you have a hand in, Roy?
Oh, no special method, Steve. I've really no preference.
Hush, gentlemen. The dream approaches.
Cinderella.
Oh, my, what a charming trio. A magician, a gypsy, and an executioner.
You're looking lovely, my dear.
Thank you, Roy. How are you, Marcia? I don't know. As yet. How are you, Steve, dear?
Looking for a glass slipper, Cinderella?
And perhaps a way to break our engagement.
Perhaps.
Quiet, everyone. Ben's getting ready to speak.
Ladies and gentlemen of the masquerade, as master of the revels, I welcome you to the ball. You've been asked here, disguised in the roles for which you have all longed these many years. You're all strangers to one another, your identity known only to yourselves. Thus you will remain till midnight. But till that hour, the mystery of the unknown is yours. The excitement of living a dream is in your hands. I see a magician here, a peasant, a statesman, a clown such as myself, and oh, there's Cinderella, who at midnight will find that dreams must end. But until the clock strikes, give yourselves to music and wine and dancing.
Now, there you are, my friends. The wiles of the sorcerer are many.
Oh, show us another trick, magician.
No, no, I must put my knives away now. One more trick and your eyes will be quicker than my hands.
Steve, I've got to see you.
Oh, want to know how I did that last trick?
Come here, quickly.
What's the matter, Ben?
There's something upstairs I want you to see.
Can't it wait?
You had better come now.
Whatever it is, you're guarding it like a state secret. Ben, don't look so pale. It can't be as bad as all that.
Were you up here earlier this evening?
Yes, I think so.
Were you in the library?
You must have been spying on me. I was there a little while ago. Where are we going?
To the library. Here. Here we are. There. In front of the fireplace.
No, it can't be.
Unfortunately, it is. Joan Williams. Stabbed to death.
I don't believe it.
It's not an illusion, Steve. It's real. I found her like this a few minutes ago.
But how did it happen?
I thought you could tell me.
What are you talking about?
Look at that knife closely.
Good heavens.
Isn't that one of the knives that you were using in your demonstration tonight, Steve?
Oh, you're talking nonsense, Ben. I didn't kill her.
Who said you did?
Well, you inferred it. Oh, what's the sense of this wrangling? Joan's dead. I didn't do it, but I want the man who did.
There's a set of prints on the knife handle, Steve. If they match yours, well, that's the answer.
You're pretty well convinced that I murdered her, aren't you, Ben?
We'll let the police decide that. I'm going to call them.
Well... No, no, you can't, Ben. You've got to give me a chance first.
No? What do you mean?
I swear to you that I didn't do it, Ben. Now, you've got to let me find who did. Just a few hours, that's all I need. Just till midnight.
All right, Steve. Till midnight, then.
Hello, darling. Who's in the library with you?
Oh, come in quickly.
Ben told me that you were hiding away in here. You killed her.
No, I didn't do it. I'm wondering if you did.
Don't be a fool, Steve. You can't get away with murder that easily.
I had no motive, Marcia. Unfortunately, you did.
Does anyone else know she's dead?
Ben found the body.
And he's called the police.
No, he's given me till midnight to find the murderer.
Oh, what a complete waste of time.
Not altogether, Marcia. Have you forgotten your prediction earlier this evening?
That's of no importance. I'll admit I'm glad she's dead. But my wishing it didn't put that knife in her back.
That remains to be seen, darling.
Let's get it over and said with Steve. I hope you're guilty. I hope they hang you. You've treated me like a fool. You ask for everything you're going to get.
I didn't know you could be so vicious, Marcia.
I only hope that I'll be able to testify against you.
Thank you, my sweet.
I'm not interrupting, am I?
No, I'm leaving. Good luck, Steve.
Don't go too far away, Marcia. You might be very helpful to me.
I'll be here when the police come.
So long, Marcia.
Well, we both lose, Roy.
Yes, so Ben told me. He also said he thinks you did it, but I don't agree.
Thanks. But how about some evidence?
Haven't you any ideas at all?
No, but that executioner's costume of yours worries me.
I'm sorry, Steve, but this is my night off. My record's as clean as yours.
How about Ben?
I can't figure out a motive for him.
Well, he's my business partner. He might be trying to pin this on me.
Very weak, old pal.
Did you have a motive?
Well, I wanted her to marry me again, but she refused. Said she was waiting for you to make up your mind.
The police could claim I killed Joan to get her out of the way. Oh, they'll dream up some motive.
I'll tell you what I'll do, Steve. I'll come in with you. I don't think you did it, and I've as much a stake as you in finding the murderer.
Thanks, Roy. But we've got to work fast.
I want to talk to Marcia. She had a pretty good motive for killing Joan.
Yes, jealousy is still fashionable, Roy. That's a good lead.
You'd better quiz Ben. See what you can find.
He's been pretty anxious to call the police. I wonder what he's hiding.
Suppose you rattle a skeleton or two in his closet, Steve. Maybe we'll come up with a murderer.
Any clues so far, Steve?
It's not very encouraging, Ben.
Remember our agreement. Midnight's the deadline.
You know, Ben, I've completely neglected to ask you some rather important questions.
Hmm? Well, what's on your mind, Steve?
Well, for one thing, how come you happened to find Joan's body?
I'll tell that to the police.
Oh, I'm trying to clear myself of suspicion of murder, Ben.
Make a very bad debating partner. Why not question Roy Benson?
Now, listen, Ben, this is no idle business transaction. You've accused me of murder. Might be decent enough to explain why I should be so certain of your innocence.
Suppose I call the police. Right now, Steve, let them settle the question of where the guilt belongs.
You promised to hold off till midnight.
Very well, then, but you might do better trying to clear yourself than just standing here arguing.
Goodbye.
Where are you going?
I have an appointment with an executioner. Want to come along?
Is Roy waiting in the library?
Yes. That's strange.
What's wrong?
The door's locked, but the key is in the lock.
Here, let me open it. There we are.
Ben, look, there by the table.
Great Scott. It's Benson.
We're too late. He's dead.
It's horrible. The bullet did a thorough job.
Strange we didn't hear the shot.
I used a silencer. It's still on the gun.
No, don't touch it, Ben. Leave it for the police.
I want to apologize, Steve. You're completely innocent.
How do you know?
Well, it's obvious now. Roy killed Joan, probably because he was incensed at her refusal to marry him again. Then he committed suicide at the realization of what he'd done.
Well, it's a logical explanation, Ben, and it clears me completely, but I can't accept it.
Why not?
Because Roy didn't commit suicide.
Steve, look at the layout of the room yourself. The gun's in his right hand, he was shot in the right temple, and the body of his victim's beside him.
Very neat deduction, but you left out the one flaw.
Hmm? What's that?
The door to this room was locked from the outside. Obviously, death was instantaneous. If Roy had shot himself, he couldn't have locked the door from the other side.
Yes, you're right. I unlocked that door myself.
Yes, Roy Benson was murdered, and the killer must have been frightened away while he was locking the door.
Then you're still implicated. But it's a rather gruesome joke on you. Somebody killed the executioner.
Our murderer has a sense of humor. Fine. Maybe my laugh's coming up.
Destiny's Highway has led Stephen Raymond and his fiancée, Marcia Williams, to the home of Steve's partner, Ben Carter, where a masquerade ball is in progress. It is a house of gaiety. Music and laughter pervade the lower floor. Yes, downstairs there is revelry, but upstairs, death. In the library lie the bodies of Joan Williams and Roy Benson, her ex-husband. Steve Raymond, who has come to the masquerade dressed as a magician, is the chief suspect. For while Roy Benson was shot, the knife found in Joan Williams' body was used in Steve's magic act. Ben Carter, Steve's host, has promised to wait until midnight before calling the police in order that Steve might find sufficient evidence to exonerate himself and perhaps find the real murderer. Steve is alone with Ben Carter. They're talking.
It's not very far from midnight, Steve.
Well, until they unmask Ben, I have a chance to find the murderer. The same person killed them both.
The knife that killed Joan was yours. But whose gun was it?
Well, the police can trace the registry.
That's impossible. The serial number was filed off.
How do you know that?
I examined the gun while we were upstairs.
But I had told you not to, Ben. I wanted the police to find things untouched.
I was only trying to help you, Steve. After all, you're the only one on whom the police can build a case. Remember, it was your knife that killed Joan.
Well, whoever stole that knife from me killed Joan and Roy.
Better use your magician's get-up of yours, Steve, and see if you can pull a murderer out of your top hat.
Yes, I'm going back to the party and do just that. I'm a successful stockbroker. Same thing.
How about another chick?
Oh, I'm sorry, but I've concluded my last performance. For a long while, I'm afraid.
Steve, I've got something to tell you.
What is it?
I can't tell you here. I'll come into the next room.
All right.
Steve, I think I know who killed Joan and Roy.
Good girl. Who?
Ben Carter.
Are you sure?
Practically. I was in the library looking at Joan's body, and I heard somebody in the next room. I turned out the lights and hid behind the large chair next to the fireplace.
Did he come into the library?
Yes. It was pitch black without the lights, but he had a flashlight with him. He played the light all over the floor as if he were looking for something.
Do you know what it was?
No, Steve. I was afraid to look out from behind the chair for fear he'd see me.
How long was he there?
Oh, about 5 minutes. I don't think he found what he was searching for, though. When he left the room, he muttered something about coming back later.
Did you come right down here after he left?
Oh, no. Right after he left the room, I went to the phone and called the police.
Now, why did you do that?
Oh, I found the murderer. So it was my duty to notify them.
How do you know Ben didn't hear you call?
Oh, I waited until he was far enough down the hall. I even kept the lights out in case he happened to look back.
How long ago did you phone?
Just a few minutes ago. I came right down here to you after I called.
I'll have to work fast. Come along, Marcia. I want to look at that library. Oh, no light showing under the door. Let's go in.
Nothing's been touched since I was here.
Now, what could Ben have been searching for?
Perhaps he dropped something when he killed Joan and Roy.
Yes, possibly, but what?
Steve, look.
Hmm?
There, under that chair near the fireplace.
Yes, I see it.
What is it?
A large black button.
I recognize that. Didn't you notice that one of the buttons on Ben's clown suit was missing?
Yes, you're right, Marcia.
There, doesn't that prove his guilt?
Not necessarily. The thing that still interests me is his certainty that my fingerprints are on the handle of the knife that killed Joan.
Well, how could it have been used without disturbing your prints?
By wearing gloves and using the blade part of the knife for throwing.
That's very clever of you, darling.
If my prints are still on that knife handle, they were placed there when I used the weapon in my little act downstairs. When it was stolen from me, the prints were very carefully preserved.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to make a call, try to get some information on fingerprints.
Let me have the inspector, please.
Wait a minute. Someone's on the other extension.
Who is it?
Ben. He's decided not to wait till midnight, as he promised me. He's a little worried. Listen.
Inspector Bolden, this is Ben Carter, 116 Ocean Road.
Yes, Mr. Carter.
There have been two murders in my house. You'd better send someone out immediately.
Two murders? Both at the same time?
No, they happened separately.
What's going on up there?
Please hurry. The murderer is still in the house. I'll watch him till you get here.
Well, lock the doors. I want no one to leave before I get there.
Crazy? He's giving himself up.
I'm afraid he's not, Marcia. He determined to prove me guilty.
Oh, he hasn't a chance.
Well, hasn't he? What proof do we have?
Well, I saw him in this room.
When Joan and Roy were killed?
Of course not. But why was he sneaking around in here looking for this lost button?
Well, whatever the reason, I'm afraid my goose and I are cooked quite thoroughly.
Oh, no, you're not.
Hey, where are you going?
Quiet. There's someone at the door.
I think you ought to know. I called the police. They'll be here shortly.
Yes, I know. We heard you on the phone, Ben.
I wouldn't advise either of you to leave the house.
Why don't you stop all this pretense, Ben? We know you killed Joan and Roy.
Marcia is still loyal to you, Steve.
I was behind this chair earlier this evening when you came up here prowling around with a flashlight.
Well, why didn't you help me find what I was searching for?
Was it this?
Yes. Yes, the button from my costume. Please give it to me.
Oh, no. This goes to the police.
Now, don't be absurd, Marcia. I lost it up here before the ball began.
I'm sorry to contradict you, Ben, but it was on your clown suit when we first came tonight.
Oh, right.
Thanks for calling the police, Ben.
All right, I admit I lost it up here after Joan and Roy were killed. I wanted the button back because I knew it would look suspicious if the police found it.
Mm-hmm.
It's midnight. I have to end the masquerade.
Yes, and we mustn't delay the master of the revels.
Coming, Steve?
Yes, might as well, Ben. We'll keep an eye on one another until the police decide which one of us is the murderer.
Ladies and gentlemen of the masquerade, the time has come when you must leave the mystery of the unknown and return to the reality of the present. The peasant will become a wealthy man, the clown a respected philosopher, the beggar a statesman. This is the moment. Unmask, please.
Ben, the police are in the hall.
Take care of them for a minute, Steve. I'll be right back.
Oh, I'll give them all the clues they require. Well, what's the delay? Mr. Carter will be here in just a moment, Inspector. My name's Steve Raymond. I believe that Mr. Carter considers me the principal suspect.
Did you do it?
No. I hope you'll believe me.
I believe no one, only evidence.
Would you care to see the bodies?
I want to see Mr. Carter first.
Come on, Inspector. That came from the garden.
Then that's where we're heading for. Let's go. Time for hysteria.
Well, I was sitting here under this arbor when I suddenly heard someone moving in back of me. I turned around quickly and saw Ben come toward me. That gun was in his hand.
What did he say to you?
Oh, his face had sort of a crazy look on it. He told me that I was the only one who could possibly testify against him. He came closer to me and brought the gun down as if to strike me.
Did he hit you?
No, I dodged the blow and I grabbed with him for the gun. Finally, I managed to get possession of it. And I shot him. It was the only thing I could do.
Let me see that gun, Mr. Raymond.
Yes, here you are, Inspector.
Will you hold the flashlight, Mr. Raymond?
Surely.
Now, just a little fingerprint powder over the butt of the revolver. There we are. Now, do you see the impression?
Yes, there are two distinct sets of prints on the butt.
Just as I told you, Ben and I fought for the gun.
Is your conclusion the same as mine, Mr. Raymond?
I'm afraid it is, Inspector. Marcia lied in her story.
That's ridiculous, Steve. Don't you see the two sets of prints?
That's just it, Marcia. If you and Ben had fought for possession of the gun, the two sets of prints would have been smudged and blurred. Not distinct and clear as they are now.
It was very convenient of you to tell that story. Why'd you try to kill this man?
Try? He's dead, isn't he?
Not quite. Fortunately for him, one bullet missed and the other just creased his scalp. He'll be around shortly and in fine shape to testify against you.
This was your second mistake, Marsha. I first became suspicious of your sudden reformation in my behalf when you told me you dialed the police telephone number in the darkened library. I was convinced you hadn't phoned when we listened in on Ben's call to police headquarters. It was obvious from the inspector's reaction that it was the first report of the murders he had had.
Watch out, young lady. Don't make me chase you through the garden. I'm not that young anymore.
Let go of me. Go of me. Of course I killed him. Joan was a worthless fool trying to take you away from me. I stole your knife and used it the way you guessed I did. Your prints were on the handle, but Ben didn't know for certain whether they were yours.
Why did you kill Roy?
He accused me of killing Joan, and he told me that he had the proof to back up his charge. And I couldn't take a chance. And if I hadn't locked the door, you would never have guessed that it wasn't suicide.
One mistake is all that's needed, young lady. Well, Mr. Raymond, I guess that's about all.
Yes, Inspector. I'm afraid the masquerade is over.
From shadows and stillness, mystery weaves a spell of strangest fascination, charging the mind with doubts and fears. For mystery is a strange companion, a living memory in the haunting hour.
The Haunting Hour on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated broadcast from 1945. And that wraps up this hour of radio horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for listening.